Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Becky Baker again. I'm here with Mike Crocker from the Dickerson Park Zoo. And get a chance to do a little bit more in detail than what we did when we were doing the STEM Spots itself. So, Mike, certainly like to welcome you back.
Thank you.
And I know you have been involved with the zoo over a number of years, because for a long time, Mike Crocker and the Dickerson Park Zoo were literally one and the same for so long. So can you tell us a little bit about how long you've been there and what your experiences have been in being at the zoo?
Okay, yes. I've been there a little over 42 years now. So when I started at the zoo back in 1976, it was really pretty primitive back then. It was just in the early part of trying to raise money and support to redevelop the zoo. And so that was a long process. The zoo today is not like it was a long time ago. It's modernized. It's accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. There's somewhere around 220 to 240 zoos and aquariums that are able to meet the rigid accreditation standards and be accredited by that national organization. So I've seen a lot of changes over the years. It's been an interesting and rewarding career for me. I love going to work. I still do, even after all that time.
Oh, I didn't realize that the zoo actually had been a private zoo back in the early or late 1800s, and then started from Springfield purchasing it and donating the land, I guess, in the early 20s.
Right. It actually started as a private zoo in 1890, and it only lasted a few years. I think 3 or 4 years, maybe. And the city bought the property from the estate of Jerome Dickerson in 1922. And at that time, the city had a small zoo located in Phelps Grove Park. So they moved those animals to the Dickerson Park location in 1923. So it's been a public zoo since 1923.
Wow.
So we'll be coming up on our 100th anniversary here within just a few years.
I'm assuming you have some big celebration planned, right? Or at least in the process of planning.
We will have, I'm sure.
So talk to me about your favorite animal stories and your favorite animal out there. You've seen it all from the last 40-some-odd years.
Well, my favorite types of animals are reptiles, especially snakes. That's how I really got started in the zoo business. I'm one of those people who played with snakes and other reptiles when they were a kid, turned into a big hobby, eventually turned into a career. I was always interested in science when I was a kid. I always took science class every year all the way through high school, took a lot of science classes when I was in college at Missouri State. So the reptiles are still my favorite. During the, 9 years that I was in animal care a long time ago, I did work with everything that we had at that time. And I was a reptile keeper, for about 2 years before I moved into other positions. My single most favorite animal at the zoo right now is probably Bozo, the male spider monkey. He has a lot of personality. He'll sometimes see me from a long distance away, and he'll start whining and vocalizing and wanting me to come over and interact with him. And he does that with a lot of different people. And I've never worked with him before, but I've been around him a lot. But he has so much personality. He's probably my favorite individual animal at the zoo.
Well, so that brings me to my next question. Do the animals have a personality? And can you tell the distinct personalities of the various species?
They do have personalities, particularly the higher animals. The primates do, the elephants do. And I'm sure the keepers that work with a lot of the other stuff recognize, individual personalities particularly in those more intelligent animals. So you tend to bond a little bit more with those that interact with you like that.
I know the paper, when it was talking about the primate that died, that the zookeepers were having a hard time with it, as well as obviously his mate, but that they were having a hard time anytime they lost an animal as well.
Yeah, that male Siamang, he was real sick for about a week. It was something that came on fairly quickly. It turned out to be a bacterial infection, and he was getting treated, getting IV fluids and then antibiotics, and they were having to physically give him the fluids, I think, about twice a day. And he was getting better. But sometimes, you know, an animal looks like they're getting better, and then they crash all of a sudden. And that's what happened with Luku.
Now, when you look at animal behavior, can you talk a little bit about some of the different behaviors that you see as being out at the zoo for so long? Do people around the zoo that are living around the zoo then hear some of that behavior in terms of the sounds, things like that? Do they know they live by a zoo?
Yeah, the people that are close enough, they'll hear sounds, particularly when the lion roars. That sound travels for a long distance, and so they can hear that. When I'm at the zoo, some of the sounds that I find the more interesting are things like the kookaburras, when they start chattering, the lemurs, when they do the same thing. I think those are really interesting sounds. You know, kookaburras is the sound, and that's an animal that comes from desert-type areas in Australia, but a lot of the older movies that were set in jungle-type surroundings, they use the sound of kookaburras, but it's not a natural sound to the to jungle areas in Africa or South America. But nevertheless, it's a very interesting sound, and I always like to hear those when I'm lucky enough to be around when that's happening.
I know that when I taught high school, which has been many years ago, one of the things that we did as part of our science development was to go out at the zoo when they were doing some of the research projects, particularly on the elephants at this point. I know the zoo has had a very active research program over the years. Can you talk a little bit about what they're doing and why they're doing those research programs?
Yeah, I think probably the earliest research project that comes to mind that we did was probably back in the late 70s and early 80s, a professor from the Ag Department at Missouri State did some work on bald eagles with obtaining semen, I think, and maybe trying to develop a way to preserve it and that sort of thing. I don't remember a lot of the details, but that's the oldest one that I can think of. Then for a long period of time, we were doing research on elephants. Most of it had to do with artificial insemination, and we did have the world's first live birth of an elephant from artificial insemination. We haven't been doing any artificial insemination in some time, but we still, one of my staff members still does various types of research with elephants. Our veterinarian does an occasional research project on a variety of different things. His are typically related to some type of health issue or some type of pharmacology, drugs, and their interactions, use on animals, that sort of thing.
So I think it's important for the public to realize that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than they sometimes see when they're out there just touring the zoo.
Right. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. We do behind-the-scenes programs for mostly school groups. We get high school groups and college groups, including a number from Missouri State, that come, bring their classes so they can kind of see what's really behind the scenes, what it takes to operate a zoo. And I think those are, you know, probably learning experiences for those students. And the general public is really not aware of what it really does go on behind the scenes.
We had an excellent behind-the-zoo tour last semester, which my kids thought was great. We really got a chance to see what was going on. So with you're saying the 100th year coming up here pretty quickly, so what kind of future plans does the zoo have for right now?
Well, we have a master plan that was last updated in 2010, and it was done in such a way that we were able to respond to changes. What I had asked the designer to do that was putting the plan together in conjunction with a team selected from our governing bodies and from the zoo staff was to not necessarily specify exact species that would go in exhibits, because the availability of animal species changes all the time, and sometimes pretty rapidly, and usually not for the better. So more and more things over time, you know, just simply are not available any longer. So the area where we probably have the space for some expansion is in the far north end of the zoo. And the plan would indicate large mammal, small mammal, that sort of thing. But when it gets right down to it, the things that would probably be realistic within the near future if funding were available, and right now that's the limiting factor, not only the money to build the exhibit, but having the resources to be able to maintain it, the staffing to do it. And right now we're very stretched to the max in taking care of what we've got. But you might see things like red pandas, Komodo dragons, which are very popular. Yeah, we have plans for another species of African primate, perhaps some penguins, some temperate-type penguins in the future.
That sounds awesomely cool. And one of the things that I've always wanted to do after I retire is to go volunteer at the zoo. So, Mike, when I retire, can I come and volunteer at the zoo?
And we have an active, ongoing volunteer program. We have a number of different types of volunteer programs. We also have a large internship program that was aimed primarily at college students to give them an opportunity to come out and get some real-life work experience in an area related to their field of study. So these are students that are coming from, you know, animal-related majors like animal science, biology, wildlife biology, fisheries and wildlife, and those kinds of things. So they come out and work with zookeepers. Veterinarian, pre-veterinary students also work with a veterinarian, so they get some experience that way. We take job shadows all the way down to eighth grade level.
Oh, wow.
So in a year's time, we accommodate in excess of 100 people for those types of experiences.
Well, like I said, I think it would be awesome to go ahead and volunteer at the zoo. So with that, Mike, I certainly want to thank you for being on the program and letting us pick your brain a little bit more and finding out some of the fascinating things that have happened at the Dickerson Park Zoo. So don't forget, guys, it is still open during December and January. So go out there and see what's going on. And I will talk to you later and have a great day.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.